Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to the Mormon Channel. You're listening to the program Past Impressions, where we discuss the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, people, places, events, and major issues associated with the history of the Restoration. I'm Brent Topp, Chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. I'm your host, and today with me are our guests, Dr. Alexander Baugh and Dr. Max Parkin. Alex is a professor of church history and doctrine at BYU, and Max is a retired longtime institute teacher at the University of Utah Institute, both some of our greatest scholars in the church on the Missouri period of church history. Welcome, brethren.
Thank you. Good to be with you again, Brent.
As we've talked about some of the events associated with the history of the church in Missouri in that difficult time period, we alluded briefly to a very, very interesting event known as Zion's Camp. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the setting and kind of the backdrop for what this was and how did this come about and what role does it play?
This is a very, very important episode in early Mormon history and certainly in the life experience of Joseph Smith. It, of course, has its genesis with the expulsion of the Latter-day Saints from Jackson County beginning really the latter part of October 1833, continuing into first part of November 1833 when these saints are basically displaced from Jackson County. Most of them made their way into Clay County. We've talked about this in a previous episode, but there were other places of relocation. Some went into Ray County, Lafayette County, some isolated counties in northern Missouri. But this was a devastating blow to Mormonism and the church in Missouri, Brent. And of course, with this displacement, the saints needed information. They needed help. They wanted to know, what do we do? We are no longer in Jackson County. This was Zion. Where are we to go now? What's the next step? And Zion's Camp proved to be that event that would try to help the saints get back into Jackson County.
And we might just add that in addition to Zion's Camp, which came a little later, the church was concerned about defending its own civil rights in Jackson County. And the governor's office suggested to them that this is a civil matter, so hire attorneys and take it to the courts, which they did. Hired four attorneys and proceeded to negotiate in the courts, try to get resolution there, but it simply didn't develop well. Consequently, the mobs in Jackson County, once they learned the Mormons were going to rebuff their demand for them to leave, they would not let them go to the courts. At least they were determined to expel them from the county before they could get resolution in the courts, though they do attempt to do so after they're in exile. But the governor realizes that the Mormons have been disserved, and the governor wants to help them. And so he kind of gives the initial nod through his attorney general, Richard Wells, to empower the Mormons to organize some kind of a military defensive body to come to Missouri and assist the state militia to escort them back to their lands. So the idea comes from the governor in part, and the Mormons take him up on that, and Zion's Camp is born.
Oh, interesting. Well, I think most of our listeners are familiar with some revelations in the Doctrine and Covenants addressing specifically what became known as Zion's Camp. Why don't we talk a little bit about the Doctrine and Covenants revelations about this event and what the Lord taught the prophet Joseph Smith and what we read today about this event?
I think the first key revelation there, Brent, is the fact that Joseph, of course, is receiving information from Missouri, from messengers, from church representatives.
We might just interject while you're saying that, just for our listeners that maybe haven't listened to the previous episodes, and that is that we have two church headquarters going on at this
right.
time. So we have many of the leaders of the church and many of the saints back in Kirtland, so you've got to get this information back and forth. And it was no easy task to get the information back to Kirtland and so forth. So when you say Joseph's getting information, it's not like email or a fax that we would have today.
Yeah, speedy travel. You could maybe make it there in 3 weeks. And of course, there was letters and correspondence going back and forth. But yeah, for him to get a personal message from someone from Missouri, it would take about 3 weeks. And then to get that message back is going to cause another delay. But Joseph Smith gets appraised of the situation, and a marvelous revelation comes. It's section 101 of the Doctrine and Covenants. It was given in December 16th of 1833. In the revelation itself, there's a marvelous parable about the nobleman and his vineyard, and it's to instruct the saints, number one, why they weren't permitted to or why these things happened to them. But the Lord gives a clear indication that there was going to be some action taken by the Mormons. And in the parable, he mentions that he would like – well, I'm just going to read this, Brent. It's verse 55 of section 101. And the Lord of the vineyard said unto one of his servants, go and gather together the residue of my servants and take all the strength of mine house, which are my warriors, my young men, and they that are middle age, and also among all my servants who are of the strength of mine house. And then he says in verse 56, and go ye straightway unto the land of my vineyard and redeem my vineyard, for it is mine, for I bought it with money. Basically, the Lord's intimating to Joseph Smith, the church will take action. And so I think as early as December of 1833, Joseph knows we are going to have some intervention here. The church will try to do something for the Missouri saints.
And in Missouri, we have two representatives there in exile, Parley Pratt and Lyman White. They rush to Kirtland to inform Joseph of the desperate condition their brethren and sisters are in Clay County, suffering. And the prophet Joseph then responds with another revelation, section 103, which in part chastises the saints in Missouri for some disobedience, but encourages them in that the Lord will call this special militia, this Zion's camp of hopefully 500 men, but it finally reduced down to 205 men and some women and children, and they'll be on their way to Missouri.
Max, why don't you tell us a little bit about what was going on simultaneously in the Missouri, of what is going on with the saints and the efforts there while Joseph is trying to gather an army, for lack of a better way of saying it, on Kirtland. What's happening in Missouri?
During the fall and winter of 1833 and 34, the Latter-day Saints in Missouri responded to the need for civil action to protect them and to assist them in their return to Jackson County. And consequently, they employed four attorneys, Alexander Doniphan, the most prominent one, David Acheson, and two others, to manage their affairs. They will eventually engage in litigation in Jackson County under these attorneys' leadership to bring some solution to the problem. But the unfortunate thing is that the court in Independence is packed, and they cannot bring justice. Even the Attorney General from Jefferson City comes to Independence to assist the Mormons, but he realizes that you cannot have justice brought to the Latter-day Saints that fall and winter through the courts because of the makeup of the court in Jackson County, composed of some of the mob participants. And so they'll later transfer their efforts to Ray County. And eventually we'll get a decision by the court there, but the court will, however, not favor the Mormons much, even though it takes 2 years of management in the courts in Ray County. In other words, in short, they just do not get justice through the courts. And this is one reason why the governor suggested his intervention through the state militia, if the Mormons would provide their own, private militia to come from the east to assist the return of the Latter-day Saints into Jackson County.
You know, I think I find that quite fascinating, that that most Latter-day Saints that are even superficially familiar with church history will have heard of Zion's Camp, and they understand a little bit about that. But I think they're probably a little surprised to think that there was maybe actually a Mormon militia in Missouri. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on with that?
That is so true, Brent. In my classes at BYU, the students just say, is it legal to actually form a group of men that's going to pick up some weapons and march to Missouri? And I say, yes, it is. At that period of time, in the Constitution of the United States is the Militia Clause. And it secured the guarantee that a state could organize local or county militias, a regional militia, and even independent militia companies, all of which could be authorized by the state and other militia authorities to protect and preserve peace in a particular area. In fact, it was mandatory that anyone between the ages of 18 and 45, if there's a few exemptions that could be qualified, but basically it was your civic duty. As I talk to my students, I say, you know, believe it or not, Joseph Smith and the church had every legal right to form an independent militia company and go to Missouri. Now, the expectation was that once they got there, Governor Dunklin and other state authorities would authorize them to assist. So they're not coming
– kind of like deputized.
Yeah, there you go.
When they go – so you're raising the group in Kirtland and picking up – people along the way, but they really wouldn't be a militia per se till the governor designated them as such.
They would have to have a state authority to be able to act. So this is not illegal. This is people would not be surprised necessarily by this kind of action today. We'd go, gosh, this couldn't happen. Well. And interestingly, the state
militia. So, like, we would be shocked today if a group of people in southeastern Idaho decided they were going to march on Cache Valley.
Well, they would never do that in Cache Valley. But anyway, the point is simply the Mormons are doing something that was not rash, or this would be something they could do. And they had expectations, of course, once they got down to Missouri, the governor would authorize them to assist his troops there. The state militia no longer exists. We do have a remnant of that in the sense that in the, I believe, 1916, something like that, the National Guard replaced the militia system in the United States. So for those of Latter-day Saints who think this is highly unusual, for 1833, 34, it would not have been by any means illegal, or it was certainly something that they could operate upon.
Another justification for Zion's Camp was a concern the governor had, and that is once the Mormons were restored to their lands in Jackson County, then who would defend them against the local citizens of that county? The governor felt that the militia could not remain there once the saints were returned to their homes and lands, and so they needed some kind of their own self-defense in the county. You couldn't depend upon the county authorities to defend them, and therefore they needed to defend themselves.
So almost like a local police force?
Yes. Or... how that would develop, we don't know the details, of course. It never happened, but that was the idea. They needed someone to defend themselves against future atrocities.
And that's a very important point, because when Governor Dunklin, if he would call out the militia, he's got to pay them. Mm-hmm. And he's more than willing, at least initially, to say, okay, we can call out the militia, but we can't retain them there indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So for the Mormons, this seems to play into their situation and the background of Zion's Camp.
You're listening to The Mormon Channel and the program Past Impressions as we're discussing a very important period of time in the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, and with me today are Professors Alex Baugh and Max Parkin as we're talking about Zion's Camp. Well, brethren, as we talked about the revelation as we found in the Doctrine and Covenants, we've talked about the Lord commanding that an army or militia be raised. Why don't we talk about how this actually occurs and what takes place in the organization and recruitment of this body known as Zion's Camp?
Well, as Max mentioned earlier, Parley Pratt and Lyman White came from Western Missouri and dead a winter, and made it back to Kirtland and informed the prophet of the condition of the saints and some of the legal maneuverings that had been going on, as well as the information they had received from the Attorney General's office. And they arrived in Kirtland on the 22nd of February. And on the 24th of February, the revelation was received. Really, we can call it the call-up of Zion's Camp. And that, again, is Section 103. So that really marks the beginning now of the attempts of the saints to establish and organize Zion's Camp.
How are they recruited? The Lord says, we want to have 500 men. So did they all of a sudden just show up at the stake center on activity night? I'm being facetious, of course, but how did we get these men together, and where do they come from, and how many do we end up with, and so forth?
Well, this was a great challenge to the church. Once Parley Pratt and Lyman White arrived in Kirtland, they were dispatched with others to go to the branches in the east to spread the word that we need to fulfill the directions of this revelation, Section 103, and raise these recruits. Word went out. The people were encouraged to join from whatever branch they might have been members of in Pennsylvania or Kentucky or wherever, and they were reticent to do so, particularly, I might say, the women folks. They didn't want their husbands to go off to war. But they knew it was dangerous. They didn't want their sons to go out and participate in this kind of a thing, even though its objective was good and noble and divinely approved. Yet they were concerned. And the word went up into Michigan as well as to recruit saints up there. Needless to say, the expectations and hope of recruiting 500 men was not successful, but they did have a substantial body of 200-plus, as we've mentioned, and they will serve, and they'll serve well. But nevertheless, it was a difficult task to get them recruited.
I might add, there was 8 men called in the Revelation, Brent, to actually organize and recruit. That's in, again, Section 103, verses 37 through 40. And the first two mentioned are Parley and Joseph. Let my servant Parley Pratt journey with my servant Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith and Parley left almost immediately from Kirtland and traveled through 12 communities in Ohio, passing through Pennsylvania and into New York. And then Joseph returns to Kirtland. But I think what's interesting here is kind of a case study here is Parley P. Pratt goes to a community called Richland, New York. Now, Richland, New York is where Wilford Woodruff and his brother Asmund are living. And Parley recruited those two brothers, and Wilford said, sign me up. I am ready to go. This sounds exciting. Asmund, not going. Asmund, of course, was married, and kind of like Max said, boy, this is an armed force. There were some people who were going, you've got to be kidding me. I'm not sure I'm cut out for this. Wilford couldn't wait. He thought this was going to be a great opportunity to go to Land of Zion, be with Joseph Smith, and so on. So they're recruiting. The idea is, of course, to when do we depart? They had a May 1 departure date. So they basically had 2 months, end of February to May 1, to put this whole operation together. Now, Joseph's never done this. He's never been a military guy. How do you, number one, recruit? Number two, we've got to get supplies. Number three, we've got to organize, of course, into companies. This task takes Joseph the bulk of his year of 1834. He's intent on fulfilling the revelation. The logistics are enormous, if you can just imagine this. And so Joseph jumps whole heart and soul into this. They don't even held the School of the Prophets that year. And so they'd recruit, unfortunately, again, by May 1, we don't have enough numbers. But Joseph is a little bit, you know, we're going to move forward anyway. And as of May 1, they had about 85 members enrolled. The revelation said, if you can't get five, get three. If you can't get 300, get one. If you can't get 100, don't go. But by about the 5th of May, they had about a company of about 105. And the expectation is, of course, well, we've got to leave. And in the meantime, hopefully more recruits will fall in line. And Parley does this the entire time. He's very rarely with the main company. He's always recruiting. And the main recruiting efforts were in New York, Ohio. As Max mentioned, we have a Lyman White and Hiram Smith going even up into the Michigan branches to try to recruit these men.
Okay. We got them gathered up and we're going to get them ready to go. And so we're now talking of May. Let's get them on their way. What's happening as they now embark on this great adventure leaving Kirtland?
Well, like any experience or expedition, there's kind of a general gathering to Kirtland. You can imagine the hubbub of these men coming together and getting ready and saying goodbye to their families. I believe it was the night before Joseph made his departure. Wilford Woodruff discusses the experience he had. Of course, he had just barely for the first time met Joseph Smith, but he mentioned that they were assembled in a small schoolhouse, and Joseph said, "Brethren, there's a small handful of priesthood here, but I want you to know you know nothing more about the history of this church than a babe on its mother's lap." And this is when he says the marvelous prophecy, "This church will fill North and South America. It will fill the world." Mm-hmm. So that kind of is the little precursor to Zion's camp. But they got off. They basically had an assembly point at New Portage, south of Kirtland. And again, as mentioned, they didn't have all the numbers they wanted, so they finally rounded up enough of the 100-plus men to begin the journey really from New Portage, Ohio. And thus will begin, I guess you'd say, about 800-900-mile trek. It is May. It's starting to get warm. This is going to be a tedious journey. They're going to organize into companies of tens and fifties, and so we kind of have another Camp of Israel kind of experience for these men very early on in early church history.
Now, Max, as we send them on their way, they still continue to recruit. What's going on as they're now going, and what do their numbers become, and how do we end up getting two different companies going two different ways on Zion's camp?
Well, there's a group, of course, in Michigan that gather, and they do so under the direction of Hiram Smith. Their numbers are not as large as those in Kirtland or that gathered at Kirtland, but they leave the Michigan area and take a separate route down into Missouri. And finally, the two groups meet just west of the Mississippi River and join hands there. And now we have finally our 205 recruits and the children and women, as I've indicated earlier. And they'll pick up one or two more, but that's the body that will pursue the route until they arrive in Clay County.
I guess I'm particularly interested in the two camps because, as you know, I served as mission president in Illinois, and both of those camps came through part of our mission, and it was a pretty big deal that some of the great events that took place as part of Zion's Camp were part of our mission history, if you will. And I also am impressed by the fact that a very prominent name joins up with Zion's Camp that had earlier joined the church because of the great Missouri missionaries, a man by the name of Charles C. Rich. And he joins up with Zion's camp there, and you were telling me, Max, he becomes an officer in that body. Why don't you tell us some other of the fascinating things that take place on their journey?
Well, I think we should also mention, Brent, that as Max mentioned, there would be a rendezvous point. And the expectation was to gather into eastern Missouri and then make the final push into western Missouri. And the target date was June 1. There was the hope that they could assemble all the men in these two major companies at a settlement known as the Allred Settlement. It was headed up by the Allred family, particularly James Allred. And it was located in just near the Salt River. I believe it was in Monroe County, wasn't it, Max? And so there's they're on their way, but they've got to rendezvous before they can finally begin that final push down to the end of western Missouri.
Unbeknown to these Latter-day Saints who are moving west, besides also their military objective, that is this escorting the saints back to Jackson County, they also brought some supplies to assist the saints in exile in Clay County. They were suffering there, and insufficient food and sometimes clothing, that sort of thing. And so those provisions were brought by Zion's camp to assist them as well. But as I say, unbeknown to these travelers, about the time the saints left Kirtland, the postmaster of Kirtland, wrote a letter to the postmaster of Independence informing him that the Mormons were on their way. The numbers were small, of course, at that time. But once the message arrived in Independence, in Jackson County, the misunderstanding of the objective of the Latter-day Saints began to explode, and the Missouri people began to prepare for their arrival. We have accounts where some of the Missouri residents believed that the Mormons were coming with 1,000, not just 200, but with 1,000 soldiers and with a cannon. And once they arrived in Jackson County, they would attack and destroy and murder and ravage the people and the women. It was an awful thing to send because the exaggeration of these rumors began to prepare the people in the West for the Mormon arrival.
In our next episode, we're going to talk about the impact of the arrival in Missouri and what happens to Zion's camp and how that shapes the history of the church, not only in that year, but in the generations to come. And so we hope that you will join us again on Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, where we discuss the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, people, places, events, and major issues associated with the history of the Restoration. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and we look forward to having you again with us.